This is a Dragon Blazer production.
Welcome to Pro Wrestling Apologist Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Atkins. And with me today is my Director of Operations, Corporate Steven.
Hello, everyone.
And remember, if this podcast doesn't sound good, it's not my fault. What you might have missed from the fact that there's no video element to this, I just punted a baby across the room. So, Steven, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Going pretty good.
Pretty.
Been doing a lot of research. A lot of work today.
Fun times. That's good, Steven. It's good to know that you're working. Mm-hmm. So, we're trying something different today. I'm recording from the Catbox Studios in the Atkins Estate, which is the sunroom of my house where my cat's litter box is.
It smells great, I bet.
So it's not bad. I keep up with cleaning it. So we're in two separate locations. Steven is in his kitchen studio.
A place.
Yes. Okay, we're not going to get into our usual coverage of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown this week because we're recording early in the week, and because I'm going on a little family vacation in the woods as far from the Rona as I can get. Just me and my ladies, my wife and my daughter, gonna hide in the woods.
Hooray.
So, a little bit of news. Kairi Sane, who was featured prominently on Raw, facing Bayley.
Yay, she beat Bayley.
Yay, big news, right? She, unfortunately, it has now, that was Monday, was her final tapings with WWE, and she is leaving the WWE. Sorry, Steven. I know she was one of your favorites.
Because
I'm a big fan as well.
I like her a lot.
Yep. So I guess she's recently gotten married and wants to go back to Japan. And what I'm hearing is that she will go there to be like an ambassador for WWE. She's leaving on good terms with WWE. So who knows? She might be back someday.
Yay. Hopefully.
Maybe. In other wrestling news, this is a big one. The Undertaker, who has allegedly retired from professional wrestling, and you know my theories on that.
Yes.
It seems like he's venturing into a new territory with his career. TikTok.
Oh, no.
Undertaker's joined all the preteens and teenage girls on
the TikTok. Creepy 50-year-old man on TikTok.
I don't have TikTok.
But, I have it just because my daughter started using it.
If The Undertaker makes any interesting TikToks, we'll be the first to cover it.
Oh, yay.
So, let's get into, we're going to introduce a new segment today. It's the PWA Hall of Shame, where we're going to give a little love to a gimmick or a wrestler or an event, something in professional wrestling that was maybe not amazing in its time, but we can look back on and enjoy now. And Ed, I'm going to let you carry that segment, Stephen. So who do you have for me today?
For the first induction of the Hall of Shame of PWA, first off, we're going to do a little trivia here. I got 10 questions here.
Okay. Oh, boy. And that's a lot of questions.
Well, they're quick, short questions. They're essentially clues. 10 clues for you. Okay. And we're going to start from the beginning and see how quickly you figure out. Now, you're not guessing this wrestler's major, because this wrestler also wrestled as another person. You're guessing the terrible gimmick he had. All right.
Okay.
So for the first clue, he wrestled for WCW and WWE.
Okay.
Doesn't narrow it down much for you.
No, keep going.
He's 6'5", 383 pounds. Does that help at all?
I'm narrowing it down.
All right. Feel free to make a guess with each clue. He debuted in 1984 and retired in 2009. The full wrestler, not the gimmick. All right. He's gone by Big Bubba and many other Bubba names.
Big Bubba.
Big Bubba.
Bubba related. Bubba adjacent names.
There was at least 3 or 4 different Bubba style names on the list. He wrestled as Siegfried the Giant.
Siegfried the Giant.
Nope. Sugar Daddy. Sugar Daddy. Daddy. His real name is Fred Ottman. Still not sure?
I feel
sure?
like I should know this. I feel like I should know. But
this his ridiculous gimmick we're talking about debuted in 1993. All right. These are the two big ones. The first big one, this is 9 and 10. He wrestled as Tugboat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know the Tugboat.
Do you know the gimmick, though?
No, I don't know the gimmick you're talking about, but I remember Tugboat.
He also wrestled as Typhoon.
Okay, I remember Typhoon, okay. Part of the natural disasters.
But that is not the gimmick.
That is not the gimmick.
The gimmick, how about if I said he was a fabulous stormtrooper?
Oh, okay.
That's right.
I didn't know that was him.
The Shockmaster!
I did not know that was the Shockmaster. I didn't know that was
the Shockmaster.
Right, so you hit me with the worst right off the bat.
Right. Hey, first induction, it has to be a big one, you know? And this was a WCW gimmick that missed the mark.
A little bit, yeah. missed the mark fresh out the gate.
That's right. Because, you know, he was a stormtrooper. He missed.
No, because he stumbled and fell immediately.
Yeah, I know. He was supposed to make his debut with the team of Sting, Dustin Rhodes, and Davey Boy Smith in an 8-man War Games match against Sid Vicious, Vader, Kane and Cole. Do you know who Kane and Cole is?
Huh.
Well, you probably know him better as Booker T and Stevie Ray.
Okay.
Harlem Heat.
What was their names?
Kane and Cole.
Kane and Cole. I didn't know they ever went. I thought they were always Booker T and Stevie Ray.
Kane was Stevie Ray and Cole was Booker T.
Okay. Booker T, later to be known as G.I. Bro.
Yes, I think that's after his Cole gimmick.
Much further down the road.
His first appearance is the most beautiful train wreck known to man at Clash of Champions 34. 24. during a Flair for the Gold hosted by none other than Flair himself. Sting and Davey Boy Smith were confronted by Sid and Harlem Heat after demanding to know who Sting's partner is. Sting exclaims more proudly than he ever should have, "All I have to say is our partner will shock the world because he is none other than Shockmaster."
Two in the pink, one in the stink.
Pyros explode and a huge ass man comes bursting through the wall like a bull in a china shop.
And he was speaking through the arena. But his voice for some reason did not match the fact that he was falling.
He trips through the wall and falls flat on his face.
But he doesn't miss a beat. He just keeps on talking through almost like someone else was his voice.
Somebody else was his voice.
What?
He falls on his face and his glittery stormtrooper mask falls off. He gets up and he puts the mask back on. And after an uncomfortable pause, first off, during his falls, Vicious laughs and yells, "Oh God." Cole says, "Who's this motherfucker?" And this was all recorded.
I've never caught that part of it before. Yes. That's funny.
Well, it gets, I have it down here. It kind of gets bleeped in television replays of it. But when the live audience first saw it, you hear Cole laughing, "Who's this motherfucker?" And then Davey Boy Smith exclaims, "He fell flat on his arse! He fell flat on his fucking arse!"
He didn't, though. He kind of fell like...
Well, that's what he said.
Belly first. But
Vicious stays in, Sid Vicious stays in character and yells angrily at him. And then he speaks. And he speaks with the cheesiest, trauma-inspired, B-rated horror movie voice ever. In 1 second, because I have this.
Oh, we got. We have some. Oh, good Lord. What are you doing? I thought you were going to play the audio. I didn't know you were going to become the Shockmaster.
I am going to become the Shockmaster right here.
Oh, man.
"Gentlemen, so you're the man that rules the world. They call me the Shockmaster. You've ruled the world long enough, Sid Vicious. Get ready. Come on. You want a piece of me? You want a piece of me? Come and get me. Come after me, Sid. I'm ready along with Davey Boy Smith and Sting and Dustin Rhodes. We'll see you at the Fall Brawl at the War Games. Until then."
Who's this motherfucker? He was well done. That was very accurate.
I was like, he was here, guys.
Yeah. Shockmaster just joined the podcast.
Apparently, someone actually put a new board underneath the wall. Is what they were what they said, and didn't tell Shockmaster because he broke through the wall just fine in practice takes. But this new board
was
there.
It's good to know that after that great introduction, that he went on. The Shockmaster went on to have a lengthy career, a very successful lengthy career in professional wrestling.
Sure. So, WCW tried to repackage the angle by making him a klutz and taking away the mask. They put him in like a jeans, t-shirt, and a hard hat. He actually won the match at War Games by bear hugging Cole. And then they abandoned that character.
Power booking, right, I would have had him fall on him and just pin him. like his finisher just be like he stumbles and falls onto his opponent and the opponent can't get up.
Yeah, well, they did repackage him as a klutz. That was his his only appearance and his last appearance in wrestling. But guess what? There's more.
Go ahead.
Banded the Shockmaster and introduced the Super Shockmaster after that.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Still had he pretty much had the same look as when he came down, but now he's Super Shockmaster. And they claimed that he was Shockmaster's nephew.
No.
He was also played by Fred Ottman.
Oh.
But a nephew version of himself. And he would refer to his uncle as Uncle Fred. He wrestled a little bit longer and eventually left in January 94. So, did not last any more than a year. And that is one of the worst gimmicks of all time and our first introduction in the PWA Hall of Shame.
All right. That was a good one.
Great job, Fred Ottman.
You went right to the most memorable one right away.
I figured we might as well go big for this.
Go big. All right. Thank you, Stephen. That was enlightening.
I like our Hall of Shame.
Yes. So now we're going to move things back to where we were a couple of weeks ago when we gave you the part one of Kane. I'm going to finally provide that part two of Kane. They got held back by our coverage of AEW.
Three
special events in a row and the horror show at Extreme Rules. So where we last left off in the saga of the Big Red Machine Kane has been unmasked and has lost to his brother, The Undertaker, at WrestleMania 20. After losing at WrestleMania 20, Kane just kind of starts stalking Lita. He becomes obsessed with her and is all creeping on her. But at the time, she's in a relationship with yet-to-be-broken Matt Hardy. And also, she's probably not super into monsters that set dudes on fire.
I think she is.
Her rejection led to Kane kidnapping Lita, and later on in the same night, Kane won a 20-man battle royal for a World Heavyweight Championship match against Chris Benoit at the Bad Blood pay-per-view. Apparently, he's riding high on that big kidnapping energy 6 days before Bad Blood and a tag team match between Kane and La Resistance. That is quite a team right there.
La Resistance.
Against Edge and Benoit. Kane beat Benoit. Lita later announced that she was pregnant with Matt Hardy's baby.
Congratulations, Lita.
Yes, and Matt. On the June 21st episode of Raw, Kane up and decided that he was the dad. Some pretty awful implications can be made there.
But she was kidnapped. What does that mean?
There's an implication.
The implication? It's like being on a boat.
The next week, he explained that he had impregnated Lita to continue his legacy and justified an attack on Shawn Michaels several weeks earlier by claiming that Michaels had stood in the way of him winning the World Heavyweight Championship. That is quite a justification for kidnapping and impregnating a woman.
That is the best explanation I can think of.
To appease Kane, general manager Eric Bischoff gave Kane a rematch with eventual real-life monster and champion Chris Benoit. instructing Benoit that he could only win by submission, whereas Kane could win the title by any means. Kane then went on to lose to Benoit. And following the match, Lita came to the ring and punched Kane in the dick.
She doesn't want any more babies with him. I mean, that's just a practical solution.
He obviously deserved it. Can't just go kidnapping women. This is all awful. This whole story is just awful. It's terrible. It's so weird to look back on this.
That's what happens when you take off the mask.
Luckily, it's about to get 10 times worse.
Oh, cool.
He then went to chokeslam her in revenge, but stopped himself when he realized that she was trying to force him to miscarry their child. As Lita is now in agreement that she is indeed pregnant with Kane's child. There's some stuff going on behind the scenes that kind of push this angle into this direction, but we'll get there. This is all very cringy and not a good look on WWE to run a damn, they don't say it, but essentially a rape pregnancy angle.
No, Craig, why would you say that?
Anywho, Kane and Matt Hardy faced one another in a Till Death Do Us Part match. At SummerSlam. I'm sure you can probably guess what the stipulation to this
I was in is. A Till Death Do Us Part match, and I, you know, didn't die, but, you know. Continue.
Well, I'm going to let you sit in whatever that was. It's a match where the winner gets to marry Lita.
Oh, that's not how my life ended.
Nope. Kane defeated Hardy, and he married Lita. Congratulations. Happy couple. On the August 23rd episode of Raw, although he was attacked by Hardy during the ceremony, he gained the upper hand and ultimately chokeslammed Hardy off the stage. A week after the wedding, General Manager Eric Bischoff gave Kane and Lita the wedding gift of choosing any match that Kane wanted at Unforgiven. Shawn Michaels was chosen and defeated Kane in a no disqualification match at the pay-per-view. The next night, on the September 13th episode of Raw, Kane accidentally fell on Lita during a match with the debuting Gene Snitsky. Do you remember Gene Snitsky, Steven?
I recognize that name, but not much. Not much more than that.
He had like messed up teeth. Like I think they like he always like they always had him dye his teeth for some reason. I don't know. He was anyway. Snitsky hit him in the back with a steel chair, causing Lita to miscarry her baby. Whoopsies.
Oh, just a lighthearted miscarriage storyline in WWE.
Caused Kane to fall on her and miscarry the baby. She and Kane's little monstrous, probable rape baby was gone. This is awful. Snitsky then started the hilariously bad angle where he kept saying the miscarriage was not his fault, which became an odd catchphrase for him throughout his career. He also cut
He'd a promo like that one back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's better than what he's doing nowadays, which is God knows what. he also cut a promo where he brought a bunch of baby dolls into the ring and started punting them into the crowd.
Kick the baby!
Mocking the rape miscarriage.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, let's reflect on all that. This is the hard part of being pro wrestling apologists. We got nothing. There's no justifying any of this. It's all... No. Very awful. The only good thing about any of this was that it was funny seeing Gene Snitsky punting baby dolls into the, I don't know. It's just, I went back and watched it. It is a hoot.
Hoonala.
Sometimes wrestling is not okay.
Don't punt Kane's, babies.
No. Kane sought revenge against Snitsky for causing the death of his child, but lost to Snitsky in a steel chair match at Taboo Tuesday. You remember Taboo Tuesday?
I remember it not lasting long.
It's a pay-per-view where that was on a Tuesday. That was the weird, crazy part about it.
Ooh, my.
And fans got to vote on each of the matches. So they would always throw out like one stipulation that's like the one that they knew everybody would vote for, and then some stinkers that they didn't think anybody would vote for.
I actually like this idea. Would like to see it back.
It's well, and it came back as cyber. They changed it to Cyber Sunday for a while, and then it was gone. Snitsky crushes larynx, and Kane was sidelined for several months. He crushed his larynx with a chair. The real reason Kane was sidelined is because he took time off to film the movie See No Evil, where he played a serial killer that takes people's eyeballs out. Speaking of eyeball removal, I hope you caught our last episode.
Seth Rollins is
the horror
kid.
Show. On the horror show at Extreme Rules.
That's right. Seth Rollins is his child that didn't die and get miscarried. Because now he's taking eyeballs.
So, Stephen, have you watched this film?
I have. Don't remember much of it. I don't remember it being all that bad either.
Maybe we'll watch it for an episode sometime.
It's just a cheesy horror movie with Kane as the killer.
So Kane returned in January 2005. Now a babyface, I guess. Because why not? I guess he's a babyface. The kidnapping. Yes.
Well, you just got to give him a chance.
Yes. He defeated Snitsky, who now just goes by Snitsky. They dropped his first name as WWE does these kinds of things. At New Year's Revolution. After WrestleMania 21, Kane and Lita reconciled with one another. She forgave him for all the kidnapping and possible rape stuff. And began antagonizing Lita's rival, Trish Stratus. This led to a match between Kane and Stratus's hired bodyguard, Viscera, at Backlash. That was won by Kane. If you're wondering where Matt Hardy is in all this, he's been released by WWE in the midst of the very public real-life affair that Lita had with Edge.
Yeah.
Yes, we all know this story. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to that saga someday.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, it's like, holy shit, she cheated on him, and then, oh, we're also going to fire you, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. It did him pretty dirty, but
yeah,
it all worked itself out.
This is the start of Matt Hardy being broken.
I think we'll do an episode on Matt Hardy someday. He's had some ups and downs in overall a very great career that still goes on to this day.
He's fantastic today, actually.
Yes. So Lita later turned on Kane. Now, mind you, in this scenario, Lita is the heel. Kane is the babyface now. Does that make sense? And she started an on-screen relationship with Edge, because basically the fans kind of forced that to happen. They were booing Edge and booing Lita, and the fans were this is where the internet's kind of starting to have an effect on professional wrestling in the early days of that. So
yeah,
they knew what was up. Being hyper aware of this connection. This led to a feud between Kane and Edge. And Kane defeated Edge at Vengeance despite interference from Snitsky. The feud ended when Edge defeated Kane in a stretcher match on the July 25th episode of Raw. Kane returned to WWE television on October 17th, 2005. Winning an 8-man battle royal. As a result of his victory, he, along with Big Show and Shawn Michaels, was featured in an internet poll to decide who would receive a shot at the WWE Championship at Taboo Tuesday, which is still going on at this point. I think it only went on for a couple of years. In the weeks before Taboo Tuesday, Kane and Big Show teamed together on several occasions. The poll was won by Shawn Michaels, and Kane and Big Show teamed together to face Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch, defeating them for the World Tag Team Championship. They successfully retained their championship throughout the remainder of 2005, during which they engaged in an interpromotional feud with members of the SmackDown brand. On December 12th episode of Raw, Kane beat Triple H in an Elimination Chamber qualifying match. Then Kane participated in the Elimination Chamber at New Year's Revolution, was eliminated by Carlito and Chris Masters. He and Big Show feuded with those two though early 2006, culminating in successful title defense at WrestleMania 22nd on April 2nd. The following evening, Kane and Big Show lost the World Tag Team Championship to Spirit Squad members Kenny and Mikey. 1 week later, Kane and Big Show faced Spirit Squad members Johnny and Nikki. And I think Nikki is Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, I knew Dolph was a part of it, but I couldn't remember which one. I remember Kenny Dykstra was kind of popular shortly after, but I know Dolph was Kenny, in there
Kenny,
too.
Kenny became Kenny Dykstra. And yeah, Dolph Ziggler was, I can't off the top of my head tell you who the other guys were, but
Nikki
ended up being the big standout, obviously. As such he just got done competing for the world title.
Such a weird and terrible gimmick, but we got some decent wrestlers out of there. Because I remember Dykstra was pretty decent.
I think he was pretty good, yeah. I don't know. I'd have to look back to see what the story was there, why he didn't work out. But, yeah. Anywho, in that match, Big Show and Kane were disqualified after Kane snapped due to voices in his head. Kind of getting back to being crazy again.
Oh my.
In subsequent weeks, Kane began attacking anyone who mentioned the day May 19th.
Okay.
People are just like going around like, hey, you got any plans on May 19th? And Kane's just flipping out.
Was it around May 19th?
We'll get there. During the match between Kane and Big Show Backlash, Kane's voice began echoing throughout the arena saying, May 19th. It's happening again, and they're all going to know. Leaving Kane visibly shaken. Kane's voice was going throughout the arena while Kane was in the ring. So Kane's voice was antagonizing Kane.
So we heard the voices in his head. Okay.
Yes. Big Show then struck Kane with a chair. He's like, dude, snap out of it. And hit him with a chair.
As one does, yeah.
Resulting in a no contest. On May 19th, that date, Kane appeared on SmackDown as John Bradshaw Layfield's handpicked opponent for Rey Mysterio. After the aforementioned voices and mask video began playing, it was like Kane's old mask would be on the screen with those voices.
Oh, so his mask is talking to him in his head. That's nice.
Yes. Kane chokeslammed Layfield Mysterio before leaving the ring. On the following episode of Raw, he claimed that May 19th was the date in which his mother and adopted family were killed in a fire.
Bringing that well back.
The voices continued to the May 29th episode of Raw when Kane was confronted by the source of the voice. An imposter Kane that was dressed in Kane's old outfit with the mask and everything. Underneath this mask was actually good brother Luke Gallows.
Huh.
His first gimmick in the WWE. Wearing Kane's old mask and his ring attire, he chokeslammed Kane during the match against Shelton Benjamin for the Intercontinental Championship. Kane and Faux Kane, or a doppelganger? Continued to fight one another in subsequent weeks, leading to a match between the two being scheduled for Vengeance, in which the real Kane lost to the imposter. On the June 26th episode of Raw, Kane threw the imposter out of the arena and removed the mask, saying, I believe this is mine. Kane was absent from WWE television for 2 months after, as he toured Europe to promote the movie. By the way, came out on May 19th.
Oh, well.
That was the release. I see. It was just a weird, weird promotion for his movie.
Jeez.
Kane returned at SummerSlam, attacking Umaga. I used to love Umaga, who was interfering in the D-Generation X versus Mr. McMahon and Shane McMahon tag team match. Upon his return, he faced his former partner Big Show for the ECW Championship. This is when ECW was a
WWE product.
WWE, you know, in a losing effort. Soon after, Kane would engage in a major feud with Umaga that concluded on October 9th in a loser leaves Raw match, which he lost. So he had to leave Raw.
Aww.
We're going to skip through the next couple years where Kane had another... where Kane had another run teaming with Undertaker, having some mid-card feuds that weren't terribly memorable. And then he eventually joins the ECW brand for a bit after WrestleMania 14th when he won a Battle Royal earlier in the show and then went on later in the night to... It will bring you back to episode one of PWA. He faced Chavo Guerrero and beat him in a record 11 seconds to win the ECW title. Poor Chavo.
Poor Chavo.
Kane went on to eventually lose that title to Mark Henry. So Kane had now become a WWF champion earlier in his career. And then he became the ECW champion. On the June 4th episode of SmackDown, Kane stated that he had found his brother, The Undertaker, in a vegetative state over Memorial Day weekend. Too many burgers. No, that wasn't why. And vowed revenge on whoever was responsible. Due to Undertaker's injury, a battle royal was held to determine his replacement for the Fatal 4-Way, which Rey Mysterio won by last eliminating Kane. Mysterio would go on to win the match at Fatal 4-Way. Kane participated in his fourth Money in the Bank ladder match at the first official Money in the Bank pay-per-view. He won that match and cashed in his Money in the Bank contract later that night, defeating Rey Mysterio, who had just defeated Jack Swagger. Rey had just won the title from Jack Swagger, and then Kane cashed in on him to win the title, thus making Kane the first wrestler in WWE history to win the WWE Championship, the ECW Championship, and the World Heavyweight Championship. He also became the first wrestler to cash in the Money in the Bank contract on the same night it was won, and also holds the record for the fastest cash in at 47 minutes. Pretty cool.
Now, do you know how many Money in the Bank matches we had before this happened?
This was, I think, the fourth Money in the Bank.
Okay.
So I was thinking there was... I might be wrong on that. I was thinking there was three, because there was... wasn't it? It was Edge won the first one. Then... yeah, I don't want to spend too much time thinking about this. I'm thinking CM Punk might have won the second one. And then, like, Mr. Kennedy.
I used to love Mr. Kennedy.
Who then, I think he got injured and had a match with Edge where Edge won his Money in the Bank. So Mr. Kennedy never actually got to. I think that's the way it worked. I might be wrong. There might be more than that. Yeah, I think I might be wrong.
I'm sorry if I threw you off your game. I was just, you know, curious.
You did. You just threw me right off. See, this is all right off the top of my head. I'm totally not looking at notes, so I have to really dig into my brain. Yes. This would... So yeah, all those accolades, pretty cool. And this was also his first time holding the big one, and I'm not counting an ECW title, for more than one day. On the next SmackDown on July 23rd, Kane accused Mysterio of putting The Undertaker in a vegetative state. Mysterio countered the accusations, claiming that Kane himself was the attacker. At SummerSlam, Kane retained the World Heavyweight Championship against Mysterio, and following their match, The Undertaker appeared. Surprise! Kane was revealed as The Undertaker's attacker.
Wow.
Thus turning him heel again and reigniting his feud with his brother, his kayfabe brother. He successfully defended the World Heavyweight Championship against The Undertaker in a no-holds-barred match at Night of Champions. On the following episode of SmackDown, a casket was brought to the ringside by Druids to reveal the return of Paul Bearer, supporting The Undertaker. At Hell in a Cell, Bearer turned on The Undertaker and allied himself with Kane, who retained the World Heavyweight Championship in a Hell in a Cell match with Bearer's help. Around this time, Bearer was revealed to be Kane's father.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
At Bragging Rights, Kane defeated Undertaker in a Buried Alive match after help from the Nexus to retain the title once again. Now, I'm sure things are starting to sound a little more modern. We're moving along more closer to modern times. Kane then rekindled his feud with Edge, who on the October 28th episode of SmackDown was named the new challenger to Kane's World Heavyweight Championship at Survivor Series. On the November 12th episode of SmackDown, Edge kidnapped Bearer. I don't even want to know what he did with him. And started to play mind games with Kane, trying to psychologically wear him down before their title match. At Survivor Series, Kane retained his title after the referee determined the match a draw due to both men pinning each other at the same time. As Edge still had Bearer in his captivity, Kane agreed to a rematch at the next pay-per-view. On December 3rd, Edge defeated Kane in a non-title match to win the rights to determine the stipulation for the title match. Edge chose a tables, ladders, and chairs match before leaving Kane with Paul Bearer. With a Paul Bearer lookalike, sorry. And driving away with the genuine Bearer strapped to the back of a truck. Following week, Kane accidentally injured Bearer, believing it to be another hoax by Edge, and Bearer was written out of the storyline. He's gone now.
Aww.
The week after Kane rampaged into the stadium to hunt down Edge, hoping to get back at him, but the two were nearly restrained by the entire SmackDown roster. At TLC, tables, ladders, and chairs, Kane lost the championship to Edge in a four-way tables, ladders, and chairs match, also involving Mysterio and Alberto Del Rio. Kane received his match for the World Heavyweight Championship on the January 7th, 2011 episode of SmackDown, a Last Man Standing match. Was unsuccessful. Kane competed in the 2011 Royal Rumble match, the largest Royal Rumble match in history.
Oh, that was the 40-man one?
Yes, and where Kane was the 40th and final person to enter the match. Kane then competed in the 2011 Elimination Chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship, eliminating Drew McIntyre before he had been released from the company, only to come back much, much stronger in Big Show before being eliminated by Edge. The following month, Kane reunited with Big Show again against a common enemy, the Core. Probably don't remember the Core, do you?
Mm-hmm. Who did that consist of?
It was Heath Slater was the lead. It was basically a breakoff of Nexus was kind of split into two groups where Nexus stayed on Raw. And the Core was like the ones that went to SmackDown. It was Justin Gabriel. Heath Slater was the leader. And I'm blanking on who else. Yeah, I'm blanking on who else was in it. But yeah, I remember those were the two big ones. Kane turned face in the process. Kane and Big Show began challenging them for the tag team titles and saving other wrestlers from their attacks. At WrestleMania, Big Show and Kane teamed with Santino Marella and Kofi Kingston, what a team, to beat the core. The next week, a rematch took place under 2 out of 3 falls, which Kane's team won. On the April 22nd episode of SmackDown, the duo defeated core members Justin Gabriel and Heath Slater to win the WWE Tag Team Championship. Their second championship as a team. That was their second championship as a team, sorry. Like I said, not notes. I'm definitely not reading off of notes. Big Show and Kane then started feuding with the New Nexus. The New Nexus was the new Nexus that was led by CM Punk.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, he just renamed it the New Nexus. After defending the titles against CM Punk and Mason Ryan at Over the Limit, Kane and Big Show lost the championship to Michael McGillicuddy. You know who Michael McGillicuddy is? Do you remember who that is?
No freaking clue.
Curtis Axel.
Oh, okay.
Against McGillicuddy, Curtis Axel, and David Otunga the following night on Raw. The team disbanded after the match. As Big Show suffered an injury, Kane participated in the second annual SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match. But the match was won by Daniel Bryan.
Yes, yes, that was yes. That's John Cena.
What?
You said you can't see me. I said that's John Cena.
Oh, so you made a dumb joke.
Yes, I made a dumb joke.
On the July 22nd episode of SmackDown, Kane was attacked by Mark Henry, who injured his leg with a steel chair. WWE reported the attack had fractured Kane's fibula, likely to sideline him for 5 months. Beginning in November 2011, WWE began airing vignettes featuring Kane in a burning red mask, ending with the words, "Kane resurrected," appearing on the screen. Kane returned on the December 12th episode of Raw wearing a metallic mask.
Oh, geez.
And do you remember when he came out wearing the metallic mask?
I do not.
It's like a welder's mask, sort of.
It makes me think of Jason X.
He removed this mask to reveal another mask. He was wearing the mask that he's wearing to this day was the one that debuted on this day. The one that looks like beef jerky on his face. The one that he still wears on occasion.
Gotcha.
He had new ring attire that looked like it was stitched. He interrupted the main event between Mark Henry and John Cena, attacking Cena before removing this metallic mask to reveal the other mask. The one, what I just said, the one that looks like beef jerky. He's a heel again. Kane continued to attack Cena in the following weeks, claiming he wanted Cena to embrace the hate from the people that boo him, rather than try to rise above the hate as Cena's t-shirt proclaimed. Kane also attacked and injured Cena's good pal, Zack Ryder. Kane and John Cena fought to a double count out at the Royal Rumble. After the match, Kane attacked Ryder again with a tombstone piledriver, and then he chokeslammed Cena. On January 19th at Elimination Chamber, Cena defeated Kane in an ambulance match to end the feud. In March, Kane initiated a feud with Randy Orton by attacking him. Kane later explained that he needed to feel like a monster again and believed that defeating Orton would allow him to do that. Orton retaliated in the following weeks, leading to a match at WrestleMania 28, which Kane won. In a rematch on the following SmackDown, Orton defeated Kane in a no disqualification match after Kane attacked Orton and his father, Cowboy Bob Orton. The pair faced off at Extreme Rules in a Falls Count Anywhere match, which Orton won by utilizing a steel chair at Over the Limit. Kane defeated Zack Ryder. Kane then engaged in a three-way feud with WWE champion CM Punk and Daniel Bryan after Bryan interfered in a non-title match between Kane and Punk to frame Punk for attacking Kane with a steel chair. On the June 1st episode of SmackDown, WWE Championship match between Kane and Punk ended in a double disqualification after Bryan attacked both men. On the June 4th episode of Raw, Kane beat CM Punk in a non-title match. And on the June 22nd episode of SmackDown, Kane defeated Daniel Bryan. Meanwhile, Bryan's jilted ex-girlfriend, AJ Lee, now current wife of CM Punk. She turned her affections to both CM Punk and Kane. She's all flirting on both of them just to piss off Daniel Bryan because her and Daniel Bryan had just broken up. Aww. The feud culminated in a triple threat match at No Way Out where Punk retained the WWE Championship after AJ distracted Kane. At the 1,000th episode of Raw, big special episode, Kane turned face when he was saved by his brother, The Undertaker, from attack by Jinder Mahal, Drew McIntyre, Tyler Rex, Kurt Hawkins, Hunico, and Camacho. Why they didn't become a huge stable, I'll never know.
Now, this is before Jinder Mahal was jacked.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yes, yes. And also before McIntyre was as jacked as he is now. At SummerSlam, Kane was defeated by Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan and Kane go on to have this deep hatred for each other. And as a result of this, of Bryan and Kane's issues, AJ, now the general manager, enrolled them in anger management classes hosted by Dr. Shelby, and they were later forced to compete in a hug it out match.
That's sweet.
At the arrangement of Dr. Shelby and AJ, the two adversaries formed a team whose constant infighting during matches inadvertently resulted in them defeating the primetime players to become the number one contenders to the WWE Tag Team Championship and defeating champions Kofi Kingston and R-Truth to win the tag titles at Night of Champions. Kane and Bryan made their first successful title defense the following night on Raw, defeating the former champions in a rematch. The following week on Raw, a Twitter poll was made for fans to vote and determine the name of Kane and Daniel Bryan's official union.
And I remember
what was
this.
That team name?
Team Hell No.
Team Hell No. That is correct. That was voted on by us, the viewers. I can't remember what the other possible names were, though. I'd have to look. I should have looked that up. Team No Hell No entered a feud with Team Road. Remember that team?
Yeah, you cut out for a second. What'd you say?
I said Team Hell No entered a feud with Team Rhodes Scholars. Do you remember that team?
I'm assuming it was Cody Rhodes and someone.
Damian Sandow.
Oh, okay.
And successfully defended the championship against them on multiple occasions. On the November 26th episode of Raw, both Kane and Daniel Bryan were assaulted by The Shield. I think you remember this team.
I remember The Shield.
Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns. Team Hell No teamed up with Ryback to face The Shield. What a team. But lost a tables, ladders, and chairs match at TLC. Further successful title defenses against Team Rhodes Scholars and 3MB. Now they're a team at this point. Drew McIntyre and Heath Slater were the ones represented in this match with Jinder watching on. Followed through December 2012 and January 2013. On the February 11th episode of Raw, Kane defeated Dolph Ziggler to earn the final spot in the number one contender elimination chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Was the second man eliminated from the match at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. On April 7th at WrestleMania 29, Team Hell No defeated Dolph Ziggler and Big E Langston, who was kind of brought up to the main roster as Dolph Ziggler's bodyguard at the time. At this time, Big E was a Langston. He had not yet lost his last name. Another successful title defense. Following WrestleMania, Team Hell No rekindled the rivalry with The Shield after they saved The Undertaker from The Shield. On the April 22nd episode of Raw, Team Hell No and The Undertaker were defeated by The Shield in a six-man tag match. Kane and Bryan then faced members of the stable in both tag team and singles competition, but were mainly unsuccessful. On May 19th at Extreme Rules, Kane and Daniel Bryan lost the WWE Tag Team Championship to Shield members Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, ending their reign at 245 days. Do you remember Team Hell No holding those titles that long?
I remember them being pretty big, so I didn't realize they held it that long.
Team Hell No lost their rematch against Reigns and Rollins on May 27th. On the June 14th episode of SmackDown, Kane, Bryan, and Randy Orton ended the Shield's unpinned, unsubmitted streak in a televised six-man tag matches. Kane unsuccessfully challenged Dean Ambrose for the United States Championship 3 days later at Payback and the following night on Raw. On the July 8th episode of Raw, Kane beat Christian in a Money in the Bank qualifying match. Then he was attacked and injured by the debuting Wyatt family, removing him from his scheduled match at Money in the Bank. Kane returned 3 weeks later, losing to Bryan. Following the match, he was attacked again by the Wyatt family, setting up a Ring of Fire match at SummerSlam against Bray Wyatt. Kane lost the match following interference from Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. And after another attack, he was carried out of the arena by the Wyatt family. The story was put in place to allow Jacobs time off from the WWE so he can film the movie See No Evil 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, I did not realize there was a second one.
You didn't know there was a See No Evil 2? Okay, it wasn't. I might have added the Electric Boogaloo. That's another one I guess we'll have to watch for the podcast sometime. Following a two-month hiatus, Kane returned at Hell in a Cell on October 27th, attacking both the Wyatt family and The Miz. The next night on Raw, Kane turned heel again. It's a roller coaster with this man, as he pledged alliance to the Stephanie McMahon by handing over his mask and reinforced his loyalty the next week by aiding members of the Authority. As part of his character change, he appeared unmasked and wore a suit and tie to fit in with the corporate ideology of the Authority. He was given the role of Director of Operations.
Yes.
Kane participated in the 2014 Royal Rumble and was eliminated by CM Punk. He reappeared later during the match, eliminating Punk to tie the record for the most eliminations in the Royal Rumble match. However, his 13-year-old record for most eliminations in a single Rumble was broken by Roman Reigns that same night. Kane then involved himself in the Authority's feud with Daniel Bryan, which included Kane booking himself in a match with Bryan on the February 17th episode of Raw and interfering in the Elimination Chamber match between Bryan and Orton at Elimination Chamber. This was during the Yes Movement. This was Kane was like a main adversary against Daniel Bryan, you know, teaming up with the Authority to try to hold Daniel Bryan down.
Right.
Following WrestleMania 30, after Kane and the New Age Outlaws, who were now heels and part of the Authority as well, lost to the Shield, who are now all baby faces, Kane was berated by Stephanie McMahon and told to find the big red monster that he was before. He returned to his masked self that same week, attacking Big Show. On the April 21st episode of Raw, Stephanie McMahon announced Kane as the number one contender of the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at Extreme Rules, prompting Kane to attack champion Daniel Bryan and his wife, Brie Bella. Kane lost his title match to Bryan at Extreme Rules. Kane helped Seth Rollins win the briefcase at Money in the Bank. He competed in a World Heavyweight Championship ladder match, which was won by John Cena. At Battleground, Kane competed in a championship match, Fatal 4-Way, against John Cena, Randy Orton, and Roman Reigns. Cena retained the title. On the July 28th episode of Raw, Kane was scheduled to face Roman Reigns, but Kane and Randy Orton attacked Reigns before the match began. Let's fast forward a bit. I need to take a sip real quick because I am doing a lot of talking. Rollins is champ after cashing in at WrestleMania. Very memorable cash in, the best cash in yet so far. In my opinion, Kane kind of served as the gatekeeper for the heavyweight championship at a steel cage match between Rollins and Orton, where he would protect the gate. So basically, if Orton would try to win, he would try to stop him, you know.
Yeah,
which Rollins won by escaping the cage. At Payback, Kane secured his role as director of operations by helping Rollins retain his title in a fatal four-way against Dean Ambrose, Randy Orton, and Roman Reigns. I was kind of enjoying this this time of Rollins being the sneaky heel and working with the corporation. And kind of making Kane be his lackey and kind of mistreating him.
Yeah, Rollins was great at this time.
Yeah. On the July 13th episode of Raw, Kane was injured by Brock Lesnar, who smashed his ankle with the steel ring steps. Following the attack, Rollins berated Kane and kicked the already injured ankle. He's mad that Kane was injured and not able to protect him any longer. Kane returned at Night of Champions with his mask as his demon persona again, preventing Sheamus from cashing his Money in the Bank contract and attacking Seth Rollins himself, turning face and having had enough of Rollins' shit. He's no longer Rollins' lackey. He appeared both as his demon and corporate personas, like back and forth, and continued his feud with Rollins, defeating him in a lumberjack match on the October 12th episode of Raw. Demon Kane lost his own WWE World Heavyweight Championship match against Rollins at Hell in a Cell. And as per the stipulation, Corporate Kane was fired from his role as the Authority's Director of Operations. From this point on, Kane is pretty much done with full-time appearances. As he started up this little side gig that we'll cover shortly. He still shows up.
I wonder what that could be.
Yes. He still shows up from time to time, reuniting with his brother in Saudi Arabia, including an awful match with the Brothers of Destruction, him and Undertaker versus DX, which brought Shawn Michaels out of retirement for a waste of a match. He had a fun reunion with Daniel Bryan as Team Hell No after Bryan's miraculous return to wrestling a couple of years after his emotional retirement.
Yeah.
As you can tell, we're ramping things up here and getting into now. So that side gig I referred to. Well, Kane left full-time wrestling to do what every old demon does when it's time to slow down and find a career that's easier on the body. He became a politician.
Yeah, that's what demons do.
The devil's favorite demon, real name Glenn Jacobs, ran for and was elected the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. If you thought mayoring would take up all the Big Red Machine's time, you'd be mistaken. He still makes the occasional appearance. Most recently, in September of last year, he appeared on an episode of Raw as himself, the devil's favorite Republican mayor of Knox County. Glenn Jacobs. He used his mayoral powers to give his good pal R-Truth a tour of the stadium. But during the tour, he revealed that you can't trust a politician when he had one of his security detail remove his shirt to reveal a referee's t-shirt. And then he rolled up Truth and pinned him to become the 24/7 champion. That was not Kane. That was Knox County Mayor Glenn Jacobs that became the 24/7 champion. Later in the same night, Truth, of course, got the title back. Then later on in the same night, after Truth got the title back, Jacobs runs out to the ring, donning the mask once more to become Kane, and makes his way to the ring to rescue baby faces at the time, Seth Rollins, Robert Roode, and Dolph Ziggler, from a beat down by heels and VOC. After helping the baby faces, he attempts to do a signature flames from the turnbuckles hand raise thing that he does, but the lights go out. And then he became one of the first victims of the Fiend, Bray Wyatt. And that was the last time we've seen Kane in on WWE programming.
Probably not the last.
No, definitely not the last. And that concludes this chapter of the career of Kane. Not the whole career. We know he'll be back. I'm sure there's more to come as he is still yet to formally retire. But I imagine the mayor of Knox County pulls that mask out of his desk drawer every now and then and reminisces about his glory days of kidnapping people and setting them on fire. So now,
long historic career.
Finally, we are done with the career of this chapter of the career of Kane. So what a journey, Stephen.
What a journey indeed. I've always loved Kane, though.
A lot of fun stuff. Yes. He's always been entertaining. So, yeah. Any more thoughts on Kane?
No, is a pretty good wrestler. Normally entertaining.
He was a pretty good big guy. He slowed down over the years, obviously, but where he starts to slow down, he always flourishes and being an interesting character. Every version of him he's proven that he can be funny. He can do comedy, through the angle with Daniel Bryan. He can play the psychopath great.
He can be a horrible human being, a little bit of everything.
A little bit of all of it. And he can play mayor of Knox County. So, I think that concludes our episode. Steven, how about you plug your pluggables?
You can follow me on Dragon Blazer Productions on Facebook, Dragon Blazer Productions on Instagram, and my Twitter page is at Dragon Blazer Pro.
Yes, and you can follow this show at PW Apologists on the Twitter. And go listen to us on all your podcast devices, your Spotify's and your Apples and your Anchors. And what else are we on? We're on
Google Podcast, Overcast.
Overcast. I don't even know what Overcast is.
I don't know.
Over it.
But it's on it.
All over it.
And get on Apple and give us Apple. 5 stars. Yeah. Yes.
5 stars.
And review.
All the stars we need. All the stars we'll ever need. Just 5. And remember, we love professional wrestling. And sometimes, not always, as we've covered in this episode, but sometimes that's okay.
All right. So long, everybody.